Find your army and destroy it.
Kelsier leaned forward, looking Vin in the eye. You trusted me enough to jump off the top of a wall, and I caught you. You're going to have to trust me this time, too. She obviously didn't like the word trust very much. She studied him in the weak lantern light, remaining quiet long enough that the silence grew uncomfortable. Finally, she snatched the bag of coins, quickly hiding it beneath her cloak.
I'll stay, she said. But not because I trust you.
Kelsier raised an eyebrow. Why then? Vin shrugged, and she sounded perfectly honest when she spoke.
Because I want to see what happens.
Having a keep in Luthadel qualified a house for high noble status. However, having a keep didn't mean that one had to live in it, especially not all of the time. Many families also maintained a residence in one of Luthadel's outskirt cities. Less crowded, cleaner, and less strict in its observance of imperial laws, Valise was a rich town. Rather than containing imposing buttressed keeps, it was filled with lavish manors and villas. Trees even lined some of the streets. Most of them were aspens, whose bone-white bark was somehow resistant to the discoloring of the ash. Vin watched the mist-cloaked city through her window, the carriage lantern extinguished at her request. Burning tin, she was able to study the neatly organized and well-groomed streets. This was a section of Feliz she had rarely seen. Despite the town's opulence, its slums were remarkably similar to the ones in every other city. Kelsier watched the city through his own window, frowning.
"You disapprove of the waste," Vin guessed, her voice a whisper.
The sound would carry to Kelsier's enhanced ears.
"You see the riches of this city and think of the Ska who worked to create it."
"That's part of it," Kelsier said, his own voice barely a whisper. "There's more, though. Considering the amount of money spent on it, this city should be beautiful." Vin cocked her head.
"It is."
Kelsier shook his head. "The homes are still stained black. The soil is still arid and lifeless. The trees still grow leaves of brown."
"Of course they're brown. What else would they be?"
"Green," Kelsier said. "Everything should be green."
Green? Vin thought. What a strange thought.
She tried to imagine trees with green leaves, but the image seemed silly. Kelsier certainly had his quirks, though anyone who had spent so long at the pits of Hathsin was bound to be left a bit strange. He turned back toward her. "Before I forget, there are a couple more things you should know about Alamancy." Vin nodded. "First," Kelsier said, "remember to burn away any unused metals you have inside of you at the end of the night. Some of the metals we use can be poisonous if digested. It's best not to sleep with them in your stomach."
"All right," Vin said.
"Also," Kelsier said, "never try to burn a metal that isn't one of the 10. I warned you that impure metals and alloys can make you sick. Well, if you try to burn a metal that isn't alomantically sound at all, it could be deadly." Vin nodded solemnly.
"Good to know," she thought.
"Ah," Kelsier said, turning back toward the window. "Here we are. The newly purchased Manor Renew. You should probably take off your cloak. The people here are loyal to us, but it always pays to be careful." Vin agreed completely. She pulled off the cloak, letting Kelsier tuck it in his pack. Then she peeked out the carriage window, peering through the mists at the approaching manor. The grounds had a low stone wall and an iron gate. A pair of guards opened the way as Sazed identified himself. The roadway inside was lined with aspens, and atop the hill ahead, Vin could see a large manor house, phantom light spilling from its windows. Sazed pulled the carriage up before the manor, then handed the reins to a servant and climbed down.
"Welcome to Manor Renew, Mistress Vin," he said, opening the door and gesturing to help her down.
Vin eyed his hand, but didn't take it, instead scrambling down on her own. The terraceman didn't seem offended by her refusal. The steps to the manor house were lit by a double line of lantern poles. As Kelsier hopped from the carriage, Vin could see a group of men gathering at the top of the white marble stairs. Kelsier climbed the steps with a springy stride. Vin followed behind, noticing how clean the steps were. They would have to be scrubbed regularly to keep the ash from staining them. Did the Ska who maintained the building know that their master was an impostor? How was Kelsier's benevolent plan to overthrow the final empire helping the common people who cleaned these steps? Thin and aging, Lord Renu wore a rich suit and a pair of aristocratic spectacles. A sparse gray mustache colored his lip, and, despite his age, he didn't carry a cane for support. He nodded respectfully to Kelsier, but maintained a dignified air. Immediately, Vin was struck by one obvious fact. This man knows what he is doing. Cayman had been skilled at impersonating noblemen, but his self-importance had always struck Vin as a bit juvenile. While there were noblemen like Cayman, the more impressive ones were like this Lord Renu, calm and self-confident. Men whose ability was in their bearing, rather than their ability to speak scornfully to those around them. Vin had to resist cringing when the impostor's eyes fell on her. He seemed far too much a nobleman, and she had been trained to reflexively avoid their attention. "The manor is looking much better," Kelsier said, shaking hands with Renu.
"Yes, I'm impressed with its progress," Renu said. "My cleaning crews are quite proficient. Give us a bit more time, and the manor will be so grand that I wouldn't hesitate to host the Lord Ruler himself."
Kelsier chuckled. "Wouldn't that be an odd dinner party?" He stepped back, gesturing toward Vin. "This is the young lady I spoke of." Renu studied her, and Vin glanced away. She didn't like it when people looked at her that way. It made her wonder how they were going to try and use her.
"We will need to speak further of this, Kelsier," Renu said, nodding toward the mansion's entrance. "The hour is late, but..."
Kelsier stepped into the building.
"Late? Why, it's barely midnight. Have your people prepare some food. Lady Vin and I missed dinner."
A missed meal was nothing new to Vin. However, Renu immediately waved to some servants, and they leapt into motion. Renu walked into the building, and Vin followed. She paused in the entryway, however, Sazed waiting patiently behind her. Kelsier paused, turning when he noticed that she wasn't following.
"Vin?"
"It's so clean," Vin said, unable to think of any other description. On jobs, she'd occasionally seen the homes of noblemen. However, those times had happened at night in dark gloom. She was unprepared for the well-lit sight before her. The white marble floors of Manor Renu seemed to glow, reflecting the light of a dozen lanterns. Everything was pristine. The walls were white, except where they had been wash-painted with traditional animal murals. A brilliant chandelier sparkled above a double staircase, and the room's other decorations, crystal sculptures, vases set with bundles of aspen branches, glistened, unmarred by soot, smudge, or fingerprint. Kelsier chuckled.
"Well, her reaction speaks highly of your efforts," he said to Lord Renu.
Vin allowed herself to be led into the building. The group turned right, entering a room whose whites were muted slightly by the addition of maroon furnishings and drapes. Renu paused.
"Perhaps the lady could enjoy some refreshment here for a moment," he said to Kelsier. "There are some matters of a delicate nature that I would discuss with you."
Kelsier shrugged.
"Fine with me," he said, following Renu toward another doorway. "Says, why don't you keep Vin company while Lord Renu and I talk?"
"Of course, Master Kelsier."
Kelsier smiled, eyeing Vin, and somehow she knew that he was leaving Sazed behind to keep her from eavesdropping. She shot the departing men an annoyed look.
"What was it that you said about trust, Kelsier?"
However, she was even more annoyed at herself for getting unsettled. Why should she care if Kelsier excluded her? She had spent her entire life being ignored and dismissed. It had never bothered her before when other crew leaders left her out of their planning sessions. Vin took a seat in one of the stiffly upholstered maroon chairs, tucking her feet up beneath her. She knew what the problem was. Kelsier had been showing her too much respect, making her feel too important. She was beginning to think that she deserved to be part of his secret confidences. Reen's laughter in the back of her mind discredited those thoughts, and she sat, annoyed at both herself and Kelsier, feeling ashamed, but not exactly certain why. Renu's servants brought her a platter of fruits and breads. They set up a small stand beside her chair and even gave her a crystalline cup filled with a glistening red liquid. She couldn't tell if it was wine or juice, and she didn't intend to find out. She did, however, pick at the food. Her instincts wouldn't let her pass up a free meal, even if it was prepared by unfamiliar hands. Sazed walked over and took a position standing just behind her chair to the right. He waited with a stiff posture, hands clasped in front of him, eyes forward. The stance was obviously intended to be respectful, but his looming posture didn't help her mood any. Vin tried to focus on her surroundings, but this only reminded her of how rich the furnishings were. She was uncomfortable amid such finery. She felt as if she stood out like a black spot on a clean rug. She didn't eat the breads for fear that she would drop crumbs on the floor, and she worried at her feet and legs, which had been stained with ash while walking through the countryside, marring the furnishings. All of this cleanliness came at some scar's expense, Vin thought. Why should I worry about disturbing it? However, she had trouble feeling outraged, for she knew this was only a front. Lord Renu had to maintain a certain level of finery. It would be suspicious to do otherwise. In addition, something else kept her from resenting the waste. The servants were happy. They went about their duties with a business-like professionalism, no sense of drudgery about their efforts. She heard laughter in the outer hallway. These were not mistreated ska. Whether they had been included in Kelsier's plans or not was irrelevant. So, Vin sat and forced herself to eat fruit, yawning occasionally. It was turning out to be a long night indeed. The servants eventually left her alone, though Sazed continued to loom just behind her. "I can't eat like this," she finally thought with frustration. "Can you not stand over my shoulder like that?" Sazed nodded. He took two steps forward so that he stood next to her chair rather than behind it. He adopted the same stiff posture, looming above her just as he had before. Vin froze in annoyance, then noticed the smile on Sazed's lips. He glanced down at her, eyes twinkling at his joke, then walked over and seated himself in the chair beside hers. "I've never known a terraceman with a sense of humor before," Vin said dryly. Sazed raised an eyebrow. "I was under the impression that you hadn't known any terraceman at all, Mistress Vin." Vin paused. "Well, I've never heard of one with a sense of humor. You're supposed to be completely rigid and formal." "We are just subtle, mistress," Sazed said. Though he sat with a stiff posture, there was still something relaxed about him. It was as if he were as comfortable when sitting properly as other people were when lounging. "That's how they're supposed to be, the perfect serving men, completely loyal to the final empire." "Is something troubling you, Mistress Vin?" Sazed asked as she studied him. "How much does he know? Perhaps he doesn't even realize that Renu is an impostor." "I was just wondering how you came here," she finally said. "You mean, how did a terraceman steward end up as part of a rebellion intending to overthrow the final empire?" Sazed asked in his soft voice. Vin flushed. Apparently he was well-versed indeed. "That is an intriguing question, mistress," Sazed said. "Certainly my situation is not common. I would say that I arrived at it because of belief."
"Belief?"
"Yes," Sazed said. "Tell me, mistress, what is it that you believe?" Vin frowned. "What kind of a question is that?" "The most important kind, I think." Vin sat for a moment, but he obviously expected a reply, so she finally shrugged.
I don't know.
People often say that, Sazed said, but I find that it is rarely true. Do you believe in the final empire?
I believe that it is strong, Vin said.
Immortal?
Vin shrugged.
It has been so far. And the Lord Ruler? Is he the ascended avatar of God? Do you believe that he, as the ministry teaches, is a sliver of infinity?
I've never thought about it before.
Perhaps you should, Sazed said. If, upon examination, you find that the ministry's teachings do not suit you, then I would be pleased to offer you an alternative.
What alternative?
Sazed smiled.
That depends. The right belief is like a good cloak, I think. If it fits you well, it keeps you warm and safe. The wrong fit, however, can suffocate.
Vin paused, frowning slightly, but Sazed just smiled. Eventually, she turned her attention back to her meal. After a short wait, the side door opened, and Kelsier and Renu returned.
Now,
Renu said, as he and Kelsier seated themselves, a group of servants bringing another plate of food for Kelsier.
Let us discuss this child. The man you were going to have play my heir will not do, you say?
Unfortunately, Kelsier said, making quick work of his food.
That complicates things greatly, Renu said.
Kelsier shrugged. We'll just have Vin be your heir. Renu shook his head.
A girl her age could inherit, but it would be suspicious for me to pick her. There are any number of legitimate male cousins in the Renu line who would be far more suitable choices. It was going to be difficult enough to get a middle-aged man past courtly scrutiny. A young girl? No. Too many people would investigate her background. Our forged family lines will survive passing scrutiny, but if someone were to actually send messengers to search out her holdings...
Kelsier frowned.
Besides, Renu added, there is another issue. If I were to name a young unmarried girl as my heir, hers would instantly become one of the most sought-after hands in Lúthedain. It would be very difficult for her to spy if she were to receive that much attention.
Vin flushed at the thought. Surprisingly, she found her heart sinking as the old impostor spoke.
This was the only part Kelsier gave me in the plan. If I can't do it, what good am I to the crew?
So, what do you suggest? Kelsier asked.
Well, she doesn't have to be my heir,
Renu said.
What if, instead, she were simply a young scion I brought with me to Lúthedain? Perhaps I promised her parents, distant but favored cousins, that I would introduce their daughter to the court. Everyone would assume that my ulterior motive is to marry her off to a high noble family, thereby gaining myself another connection to those in power. However, she wouldn't draw much attention. She would be of low status, not to mention somewhat rural.
Which would explain why she's a bit less refined than other court members, Kelsier said. No offense, Vin. Vin looked up from hiding a piece of napkin-wrapped bread in her shirt pocket.
Why would I be offended?
Kelsier smiled. Never mind. Renu nodded to himself.
Yes, this will work much better. Everyone assumes that House Renu will eventually join the high nobility, so they'll accept Vin into their ranks out of courtesy. However, she herself will be unimportant enough that most people will ignore her. That is the ideal situation for what we will want her to do.
I like it, Kelsier said. Few people expect a man of your age and mercantile concerns to bother himself with balls and parties, but having a young socialite to send instead of a rejection note will serve as an advantage to your reputation.
Indeed,
Renu said.
She'll need some refinement, however, and not just in appearance.
Vin squirmed a bit beneath this scrutiny. It looked as if her part in the plan would go forward, and she suddenly realized what that meant. Being around Renu made her uncomfortable, and he was a fake nobleman. How would she react to an entire room full of real ones?
"I'm afraid I'll have to borrow Sazed from you for a while," Kelsier said.
"Quite all right," Renu said. "He's really not my steward, but yours."
"Actually," Kelsier said, "I don't think he's anybody's steward anymore, eh, Saez?"
Sazed cocked his head.
"A terraceman without a master is like a soldier with no weapon, Master Kelsier. I have enjoyed my time attending to Lord Renu, as I am certain that I shall enjoy returning to your service."
"Oh, you won't be returning to my service," Kelsier said.
Sazed raised an eyebrow. Kelsier nodded to Vin.
"Renu is right, Saez. Vin needs some coaching, and I know plenty of high noblemen who are less refined than yourself. Do you think you could help the girl prepare?"
"I am certain that I could offer the young lady some aid," Sazed said.
"Good," Kelsier said, popping one last cake in his mouth, then rising. "I'm glad that's settled, because I'm starting to feel tired. And poor Vin looks like she's about to nod off in the middle of her fruit plate."
"I'm fine,"
Vin said immediately, the assertion weakened slightly by a stifled yawn.
"Sazed," Renu said, "would you show them to the appropriate guest chambers?"
"Of course, Master Renu,"
Sazed said, rising from his seat in a smooth motion. Vin and Kelsier trailed the tall terraceman from the room as a group of servants took away the remnants of the meal.
"I left food behind," Vin noticed, feeling a bit drowsy.
She wasn't certain what to think of the occurrence. As they crested the stairs and turned into a side hallway, Kelsier fell into place beside Vin.
"I'm sorry for excluding you back there, Vin,"
she shrugged.
"There's no reason for me to know all of your plans."
"Nonsense," Kelsier said. "Your decision tonight makes you as much a part of this team as anyone else." Renew's words in private, however, were of a personal nature. He is a marvelous actor, but he feels very uncomfortable with people knowing the specifics of how he took Lord Renew's place. I promise you, nothing we discussed has any bearing on your part in the plan."
Vin continued walking.
"I believe you."
"Good," Kelsier said with a smile, clapping her on the shoulder. "Says I know my way to the men's guest quarters. I was, after all, the one who bought this place. I can make my way from here."
"Very well, Master Kelsier,"
Sazed said with a respectful nod. Kelsier shot Vin a smile, then turned down a hallway, walking with his characteristically lively step. Vin watched him go, then followed Sazed down a different side passage, pondering the allomancy training, her discussion with Kelsier in the carriage, and finally Kelsier's promise just a few moments before. The 3,000 boxings, a fortune in coins, was a strange weight tied to her belt. Eventually, Sazed opened a particular door for her, walking in to light the lanterns.
"The linens are fresh, and I will send maids to prepare you a bath in the morning."
He turned, handing her his candle.
"Will you require anything else?"
Vin shook her head. Sazed smiled, bid her good evening, then walked back out in the hallway. Vin stood silently for a short moment, studying the room. Then she turned, glancing once again in the direction Kelsier had gone.
"Sazed,"
she said, peeking back out into the hallway. The steward paused, turning back.
"Yes, Mistress Vin?"
"Kelsier,"
Vin said quietly.
"He's a good man, isn't he?"
Sazed smiled.
"A very good man, mistress. One of the best I've known."
Vin nodded slightly.
"A good man," she said softly. "I don't think I've ever known one of those before."
Sazed smiled, then bowed his head respectfully and turned to leave. Vin let the door swing shut. The end of part one. Part 2. rebels beneath a sky of ash. In the end, I worry that my arrogance shall destroy us all. 9. Vin pushed against the coin and threw herself up into the mist. She flew away from earth and stone, soaring through the dark currents of the sky, wind fluttering her cloak. This is freedom, she thought, breathing deeply of the cool, damp air. She closed her eyes, feeling the passing wind. This was what I was always missing, yet never knew it. She opened her eyes as she began to descend. She waited until the last moment, then flicked a coin. It hit the cobblestones, and she pushed against it lightly, slowing her descent. She burned pewter with a flash and hit the ground running, dashing along Feliz's quiet streets. The late autumn air was cool, but winters were generally mild in the central dominance. Some years passed without even a flake of snow. She tossed a coin backward, then used it to push herself slightly up and to the right. She landed on a low stone wall, barely breaking stride as she ran spryly along the wall's top. Burning pewter enhanced more than muscles. It increased all the body's physical abilities. Keeping pewter at a low burn gave her a sense of balance that any night burglar would have envied. The wall turned north, and Vin paused at the corner. She fell into a crouch, bare feet and sensitive fingers gripping the chill stone. Her copper on to hide her allomancy, she flared tin to strain her senses. Stillness. Aspens made insubstantial ranks in the mist, like emaciated ska standing in their work lines. Estates rolled in the distance, each one walled, manicured, and well guarded. There were far fewer dots of light in the city than there were in Luthadel. Many of the homes were only part-time residences, their masters away visiting some other sliver of the final empire. Blue lines suddenly appeared before her, one end of each pointing at her chest, the other disappearing into the mists. Vin immediately jumped to the side, dodging as a pair of coins shot past in the night air, leaving trails in the mist. She flared pewter, landing on the cobbled street beside the wall. Her tin-enhanced ears picked out a scraping sound. Then a dark form shot into the sky, a few blue lines pointing to his coin pouch. Vin dropped a coin and threw herself into the air after her opponent. They soared for a moment, flying over the grounds of some unsuspecting nobleman. Vin's opponent suddenly changed course in the air, jerking toward the mansion itself. Vin followed, letting go of the coin below her, instead burning iron and pulling on one of the mansion's window latches. Her opponent hit first, and she heard a thud as he ran into the side of the building. He was off a second later. A light brightened, and a confused head poked out of a window as Vin spun in the air, landing feet first against the mansion. She immediately kicked off of the vertical surface, angling herself slightly and pushing against the same window latch. Glass cracked, and she shot away into the night before gravity could reclaim her. Vin flew through the mists, eyes straining to keep track of her quarry. He shot a couple of coins back at her, but she pushed them away with a dismissive thought. A hazy blue line fell downward, a dropped coin, and her opponent moved to the side again. Vin dropped her own coin and pushed. However, her coin suddenly jerked backward along the ground, the result of a push from her opponent. The sudden move changed the trajectory of Vin's jump, throwing her sideways. She cursed, flicking another coin to the side, using it to push herself back on track. By then, she'd lost her quarry. All right, she thought, hitting the soft ground just inside the wall. She emptied a few coins into her hand, then tossed the mostly full pouch into the air, giving it a strong push in the direction she had seen her quarry disappear. The pouch disappeared into the mists, trailing a faint blue allomantic line. A scattering of coins suddenly shot from the bushes ahead, streaking toward her bag. Vin smiled. Her opponent had assumed that the flying pouch was Vin herself. He was too far away to see the coins in her hand, just as he had been too far away for her to see the coins he carried. A dark figure jumped out of the bushes, hopping up onto the stone wall. Vin waited quietly as the figure ran along the wall and slipped down onto the other side. Vin launched herself straight up into the air, then threw her handful of coins at the figure passing below. He immediately pushed, sending the coins streaking away, but they were only a distraction. Vin landed on the ground before him, twin glass knives whipping from her sheaths. She lunged, slashing, but her opponent jumped backward.
"Something's wrong."
Vin ducked and threw herself to the side as a handful of glittering coins, her coins, the ones her opponent had pushed away, shot back down from the sky into her opponent's hand. He turned and sprayed them in her direction. She dropped her daggers with a quiet yelp, thrusting her hands forward and pushing on the coins. Immediately she was thrown backward, as her push was matched by her opponent. One of the coins lurched in the air, hanging directly between the two of them. The rest of the coins disappeared into the mists, pushed sideways by conflicting forces. Vin flared her steel as she flew, and heard her opponent grunt as he was pushed backward as well. Her opponent hit the wall. Vin slammed into a tree, but she flared pewter and ignored the pain. She used the wood to brace herself, continuing to push. The coin quivered in the air, trapped between the amplified strength of two allomancers. The pressure increased. Vin gritted her teeth, feeling the small aspen bend behind her. Her opponent's pushing was relentless.
"Will not be beaten,"
Vin thought, flaring both steel and pewter, grunting slightly as she threw the entire force of her strength at the coin. There was a moment of silence. Then Vin lurched backward, the tree cracking with a loud snap in the night air. Vin hit the ground in a tumble, splinters of wood scattering around her. Even tin and pewter weren't enough to keep her mind clear as she rolled across the cobblestones, eventually coming to a dizzy rest. A dark figure approached, mist cloak ribbons billowing around him. Vin lurched to her feet, grasping for knives she'd forgotten that she'd dropped. Kelsier put down his hood and held her knives toward her. One was broken. "I know it's instinctual, Vin, but you don't have to put your hands forward when you push. Nor do you have to drop what you're holding." Vin grimaced in the darkness, rubbing her shoulder and nodding as she accepted the daggers. "Nice job with the pouch," Kelsier said. "You had me for a moment."
"For all the good it did," Vin grumbled.
"You've only been doing this for a few months, Vin," he said lightly. "All things considered, your progress is fantastic. I would, however, recommend that you avoid push matches with people who weigh more than you." He paused, eyeing Vin's short figure and thin frame. "Which probably means avoiding them with pretty much everybody." Vin sighed, stretching slightly. She'd have more bruises.
"At least they won't be visible."
Now that the bruises Kamen had given her face were finally gone, Sazed had warned her to be careful. Makeup could only cover so much, and she would have to look like a proper young noblewoman if she were going to infiltrate the court. "Here," Kelsier said, handing her something. "A souvenir." Vin held up the object, the coin they had pushed between them. It was bent and flattened from the pressure. "I'll see you back at the mansion," Kelsier said. Vin nodded, and Kelsier disappeared into the night.
"He's right," she thought. "I'm smaller, I weigh less, and I have a shorter reach than anyone I'm likely to fight. If I attack someone head-on, I'll lose."
The alternative had always been her method anyway, to struggle quietly, to stay unseen. She had to learn to use allomancy the same way. Kelsier kept saying she was developing amazingly fast as an allomancer. He seemed to think it was his teaching, but Vin felt it was something else. The mists, the night prowling, it all felt right to her. She was not worried about mastering allomancy in time to help Kelsier against other mistborn. It was her other part in the plan that worried her. Sighing, Vin hopped over the wall to search for her coin pouch. Up at the mansion, not Renu's home, but one owned by some other nobleman, lights were on and people milled about. None of them ventured deeply into the night. The Ska would fear mist wraiths. The nobility would have guessed that mistborn had caused the disturbance. Neither one was something a sane person would want to confront. Vin eventually traced her pouch by steel line to the upper branches of a tree. She pulled it slightly, tugging it down into her hand, then made her way back out to the street. Kelsier would probably have left the pouch behind. The 24 or so clips it contained wouldn't have been worth his time. However, for most of her life, Vin had scrounged and starved. She just couldn't force herself to be wasteful. Even tossing coins to jump with made her uncomfortable. So she used her coins sparingly as she traveled back toward Renu's mansion, instead pushing and pulling off of buildings and discarded bits of metal. The half-jumping, half-running gait of a Mistborn came naturally to her now, and she didn't have to think much about her movements. How would she fare trying to pretend to be a noblewoman? She couldn't hide her apprehensions, not from herself. Cayman had been good at imitating noblemen because of his self-confidence, and that was one attribute Vin knew she didn't have. Her success with allomancy only proved that her place was in corners and shadows, not striding around in pretty dresses at courtly balls. Kelsier, however, refused to let her back out. Vin landed in a crouch just outside Mansion Renu, puffing slightly from exertion. She regarded the lights with a slight feeling of apprehension. "You've got to learn to do this, Vin," Kelsier kept telling her. "You're a talented allomancer, but you'll need more than steel pushes to succeed against the nobility. Until you can move in their society as easily as you do in the mists, you'll be at a disadvantage." Letting out a quiet sigh, Vin rose from her crouch, then took off her mist cloak and stuffed it away for later retrieval. Then she walked up the steps and into the building. When she asked after Sazed, the mansion servants directed her to the kitchens, so she made her way into the closed-off, hidden section of the mansion that was the servants' quarters. Even these parts of the building were kept immaculately clean. Vin was beginning to understand why Renu made such a convincing imposter. He didn't allow for imperfection. If he maintained his impersonation half as well as he maintained order in his mansion, then Vin doubted anyone would ever discover the ruse. But, she thought, he must have some flaw. Back in the meeting 2 months ago, Kelsier said that Renu wouldn't be able to withstand scrutiny by an inquisitor. Perhaps they'd be able to sense something about his emotions, something that gives him away. It was a small item, but Vin had not forgotten it. Despite Kelsier's words about honesty and trust, he still had his secrets. Everyone did. Sazed was, indeed, to be found in the kitchens. He stood with a middle-aged servant. She was tall for a Ska woman, though standing next to Sazed made her look diminutive. Vin recognized her as a member of the mansion staff. Kosan was her name. Vin had made an effort to memorize all of the names of the local staff, if only to keep tabs on them. Sazed looked over as Vin entered.
"Ah, Mistress Vin, your return is quite timely." He gestured to his companion. "This is Kosan."
Kosan studied Vin with a businesslike air. Vin longed to return to the mists where people couldn't look at her like that.
"It is long enough now, I think," Sazed said.
"Probably," Kosan said. "But I cannot perform miracles, Master Vought."
Sazed nodded. Vought was apparently the proper title for a Terrasman steward. Not quite Ska, but definitely not nobleman, the Terrasman held a very strange place in Imperial society. Vin studied the two of them suspiciously.
"Your hair, mistress," Sazed said with a calm tone. "Kosan is going to cut it for you."
"Oh," Vin said, reaching up. Her hair was getting a bit long for her taste, though somehow she doubted that Sazed was going to let her have it cropped boyishly short. Kosan waved to a chair, and Vin reluctantly seated herself. She found it unnerving to sit docilely while someone worked with shears so close to her head, but there was no getting around it. After a few moments of running her hands through Vin's hair, tisking quietly, Kosan began to snip.
"Such beautiful hair," she said, almost as if to herself. "Thick, with a nice deep black color. It's a shame to see it cared for so poorly, Master Vought. Many courtly women would die for hair like this. It has just enough body to lie full, but is straight enough to work with easily."
Sazed smiled.
"We'll have to see that it receives better care in the future," he said.
Kosan continued her work, nodding to herself. Eventually, Sazed walked over and took a seat just a few feet in front of Vin. "Kelsier hasn't returned yet, I assume?" Vin asked. Sazed shook his head, and Vin sighed. Kelsier didn't think she was practiced enough to go with him on his nightly raids, many of which he went on directly following his training sessions with Vin. During the last 2 months, Kelsier had put in appearances on the properties of a dozen different noble houses, both in Luthadel and in Feliz. He varied his disguises and apparent motives, trying to create an air of confusion among the great houses. "What?" Vin asked, eyeing Sazed, who was regarding her with a curious look. The terraceman nodded his head slightly with respect.
"I was wondering if you might be willing to listen to another proposal."
Vin sighed, rolling her eyes. "Fine. It isn't like I can do anything else but sit here."
"I think I have the perfect religion for you," Sazed said, his normally stoic face revealing a glimmer of eagerness. "It is called Trelegism, after the god Trel. Trel was worshipped by a group called the Nilazan, a people who lived far to the north. In their land, the day and night cycle was very odd. During some months of the year, it was dark for most of the day. During the summer, however, it grew dark for only a few hours at a time. The Nilazan believed that there was beauty in darkness, and that the daylight was more profane. They saw the stars as the thousand eyes of Trel watching them. The sun was the single jealous eye of Trel's brother Nolt. Since Nolt only had one eye, he made it blaze brightly to outshine his brother. The Nilazan, however, were not impressed, and preferred to worship the quiet Trel, who watched over them even when Nolt obscured the sky."
Sazed fell silent. Vin wasn't sure how to respond, so she didn't say anything.
"It really is a good religion, Mistress Vin," Sazed said. "Very gentle, yet very powerful. The Nilazan were not an advanced people, but they were quite determined. They mapped the entire night sky, counting and placing every major star. Their ways suit you, especially their preference of the night. I can tell you more, if you wish."
Vin shook her head.
"That's all right, Sazed." "Not a good fit, then?" Sazed said, frowning slightly. "Ah, well. I shall have to consider it some more. Thank you, mistress. You are very patient with me, I think."
"Consider it some more?" Vin asked. "That's the fifth religion you've tried to convert me to, Saze. How many more can there be?"
562, Sazed said. "Or at least that is the number of belief systems I know. There are likely and unfortunately others that have passed from this world without leaving traces for my people to collect."
Vin paused. "And you have all of these religions memorized?"
"As much as is possible," Sazed said. "Their prayers, their beliefs, their mythologies. Many are very similar, breakoffs or sects of one another."
"Even still, how can you remember all of that?"
"I have methods," Sazed said.
"But what's the point?" Sazed frowned.
"The answer should be obvious, I think. People are valuable, Mistress Vin, and so, therefore, are their beliefs. Since the Ascension 1,000 years ago, so many beliefs have disappeared. The Steel Ministry forbids the worship of anyone but the Lord Ruler, and the Inquisitors have quite diligently destroyed hundreds of religions. If someone doesn't remember them, then they will simply disappear."
"You mean," Vin said incredulously, "you're trying to get me to believe in religions that have been dead for 1,000 years? Sazed nodded.
"Is everyone involved with Kelsier insane?" "The final empire cannot last forever," Sazed said quietly. "I do not know if Master Kelsier will be the one who finally brings its end, but that end will come. And when it does, when the Steel Ministry no longer holds sway, men will wish to return to the beliefs of their fathers. On that day they will look to the Keepers, and on that day we shall return to mankind his forgotten truths."
"Keepers?" Vin asked as Kosan moved around to begin snipping at her bangs. "There are more like you?"
"Not many," Sacid said, "but some. Enough to pass the truths on to the next generation."
Vin sat thoughtfully, resisting the urge to squirm beneath Kosan's ministrations. The woman certainly was taking her time. When Rin had cut Vin's hair, he had been finished after just a few quick hacks.
"Shall we go over your lessons while we wait, Mistress Vin?" Sazed asked.
Vin eyed the terraceman, and he smiled just slightly. He knew that he had her captive. She couldn't hide or even sit at the window staring out into the mists. All she could do was sit and listen.
"Fine. Can you name all 10 great houses of Luthadel in order of power?"
"Venture, Hasting, Alariel, Tikiel, Lekal, Erkeller, Erekel, Hot, Urbane, and Buvidas."
"Good," Sazed said. "And you are?"
"I am the Lady Valette Renu, fourth cousin to Lord Teven Renu, who owns this mansion. My parents, Lord Hadron and Lady Valette Renu, live in Chaketh, a city in the Western Dominance. Major export, wool. My family works in trading dyes, specifically blush-dip red, from the snails that are common there, and callow field yellow, made from tree bark. As part of a trade agreement with their distant cousin, my parents sent me down here to Luthadel so I can spend some time at court."
Sazed nodded.
"And how do you feel about this opportunity?"
"I am amazed and a little overwhelmed," Vin said. "People will pay attention to me because they wish to curry favor with Lord Renu. Since I'm not familiar with the ways of court, I will be flattered by their attention. I will ingratiate myself to the court community, but I will stay quiet and out of trouble."
"Your memorization skills are admirable, mistress," Sazed said. "This humble attendant wonders how much more successful might you be if you dedicated yourself to learning, rather than dedicating yourself to avoiding our lessons."
Vin eyed him.
"Do all terracemen, humble attendants, give their masters as much lip as you do?"
"Only the successful ones."
Vin eyed him for a moment, then sighed.
"I'm sorry, Sayes. I don't mean to avoid your lessons. I just... the mists... I get distracted sometimes."
"Well, fortunately and honestly, you are very quick to learn. However, the people of the court have had their entire lives to study etiquette. Even as a rural noblewoman, there are certain things you would know."
"I know," Vin said. "I don't want to stand out."
"Oh, you can't avoid that, mistress. A newcomer from a distant part of the empire? Yes, they will notice you. We just don't want to make them suspicious. You must be considered, then dismissed. If you act too much like a fool, that will be suspect in and of itself."
"Great." Sazed paused, cocking his head slightly. A few seconds later, Vin heard footsteps in the hallway outside. Kelsier sauntered into the room, bearing a self-satisfied smile. He pulled off his mist cloak, then paused as he saw Vin.
"What?"
she asked, sinking a little further into the chair.
"The haircut looks good," Kelsier said. "Nice job, Kosan."
"It was nothing, Master Kelsier."
Vin could hear the blush in her voice.
"I just work with what I have."
"Mirror,"
Vin said, holding out her hand. Kosan handed her one, then held it up, and what she saw gave her pause. She looked like a girl. Kosan had done a remarkable job of evening out the hair, and she had managed to get rid of the snags. Vin had always found that if her hair got too long, it had a tendency to stand up. Kosan had done something about this, too. Vin's hair still wasn't very long. It barely hung down over her ears, but at least it lay flat.
"You don't want them to think of you as a girl," Rin's voice warned.
yet for once she found herself wanting to ignore that voice. "We might actually turn you into a lady, Vin," Kelsier said with a laugh, earning him a glare from Vin.
"First, we'll have to persuade her not to scowl so often, Master Kelsier," Sazed noted.
"That's going to be hard," Kelsier said. "She's quite fond of making faces. Anyway, well done, Kosan."
"I've still got a little bit of trimming to do, Master Kelsier," the woman said.
"By all means, continue," Kelsier said. "But I'm going to filch Sazed for a moment." Kelsier winked at Vin, smiled at Kosan. Then he and Sazed retreated from the room, once again leaving Vin where she couldn't eavesdrop. Kelsier peeked into the kitchen, watching Vin sit sullenly in her chair. The haircut really was good. However, his compliments had an ulterior motive. He suspected that Vin had spent far too much of her life being told that she was worthless. Perhaps if she had a bit more self-confidence, she wouldn't try to hide so much. He let the door slide shut, turning to Sazed. The terraceman waited, as always, with restful patience. "How is the training going?" Kelsier asked.
"Very well, Master Kelsier," Sazed said. "She already knew some things from training she received at her brother's hands. Above that, however, she is an extremely intelligent girl, perceptive and quick to memorize. I didn't expect such skill from one who grew up in her circumstances."
"A lot of the street children are clever," Kelsier said. "The ones who aren't dead." Sazed nodded solemnly.
"She is extremely reserved, and I sense that she doesn't see the full value in my lessons. She is very obedient, but is quick to exploit mistakes or misunderstandings. If I don't tell her exactly when and where to meet, I often have to search the entire mansion for her."
Kelsier nodded. "I think it's her way of maintaining a bit of control in her life. Anyway, what I really wanted to know is whether she's ready or not."
"I'm not sure, Master Kelsier," Sazed replied. "Pure knowledge is not the equivalent of skill. I'm not certain if she has the poise to imitate a noblewoman, even a young and inexperienced one. We've done practice dinners, gone over conversational etiquette, and memorized gossip. She seems skilled at it all, in a controlled situation. She's even done well sitting in on tea meetings when Renu entertains noble guests. However, we won't really be able to tell if she can do this until we put her alone in a party full of aristocrats."
"I wish she could practice some more," Kelsier said with a shake of his head. "But every week we spend preparing increases the chances that the Ministry will discover our budding army in the caves."
"It is a test of balance, then," Sazed said. "We must wait long enough to gather the men we need, yet move soon enough to avoid discovery."
Kelsier nodded. "We can't pause for one crew member. We'll have to find someone else to be our mole if Vin does badly. Poor girl. I wish I had time to train her better in allomancy. We've barely covered the first four medals. I just don't have enough time."
"If I might make a suggestion."
"Of course, Saze."
"Send the child with some of the missing crew members," Sazed said. "I hear that the man Breeze is a very accomplished soother, and surely the others are equally skilled. Let them show Mistress Vin how to use her abilities."
Kelsier paused thoughtfully. "That's a good idea, Saze."
"But..."
Kelsier glanced back toward the door, beyond which Vin was still petulantly getting her hair cut. "I'm not sure. Today when we were training, we got into a steel-push-shoving match. The kid has to weigh less than half what I do, but she gave me a decent pummeling anyway."
"Different people have different strengths in allomancy," Sazed said.
"Yes, but the variance isn't usually this great," Kelsier said. "Plus, it took me months and months to learn how to manipulate my pushes and pulls. It's not as easy as it sounds. Even something as simple as pushing yourself up onto a rooftop requires an understanding of weight, balance, and trajectory. But Vin, she seems to know all these things instinctively. True, she can only use the first four medals with any skill, but the progress she's made is amazing."
"She is a special girl."
Kelsier nodded. She deserves more time to learn about her powers. I feel a little guilty about pulling her into our plans. She'll probably end up at a ministry execution ceremony with the rest of us.
But that guilt won't stop you from using her to spy on the aristocracy.
Kelsier shook his head. No, he said quietly, it won't. We'll need every advantage we can get. Just watch over her, Says. From now on, you'll act as Vin's steward and guardian at the functions she attends. It won't be odd for her to bring a Terraceman servant with her.
Not at all, Says had agreed. In fact, it would be strange to send a girl her age to courtly functions without an escort.
Kelsier nodded. Protect her, Says. She might be a powerful allomancer, but she's inexperienced. I'll feel a lot less guilty about sending her into those aristocratic dens if I know you're with her.
I will protect her with my life, Master Kelsier. I promise you this.
Kelsier smiled, resting a thankful hand on Sazed's shoulder. I feel pity for the man who gets in your way. Sazed bowed his head humbly. He looked innocuous, but Kelsier knew the strength that Sazed hid. Few men, allomancers or not, would fare well in a fight with a keeper whose anger had been roused. That was probably why the ministry had hunted the sect virtually to extinction. All right, Kelsier said. Get back to your teaching. Lord Venture is throwing a ball at the end of the week, and, ready or not, Vin is going to be there.
It amazes me how many nations have united behind our purpose. There are still dissenters, of course, and some kingdoms, regrettably, have fallen to wars that I could not stop. Still, this general unity is glorious, even humbling to contemplate. I wish that the nations of mankind hadn't required such a dire threat to make them see the value of peace and cooperation.
10. Vin walked along a street in the Cracks, one of Luthadel's many ska slums, with her hood up. For some reason she found the muffled heat of a hood preferable to the oppressive red sunlight. She walked with a slouch, eyes down, sticking near to the side of the street. The ska she passed had similar airs of dejection. No one looked up. No one walked with a straight back or an optimistic smile. In the slums, those things would make one look suspicious. She'd almost forgotten how oppressive Luthadel could be. Her weeks in Feliz had accustomed her to trees and washed stone. Here there was nothing white. No creeping aspens, no whitewashed granite. All was black. Buildings were stained by countless repetitive ashfalls. Air curled with smoke from the infamous Luthadel smithies and 1,000 separate noble kitchens. Cobblestones, doorways, and corners were clogged with soot. The slums were rarely swept clean.
It's like things are actually brighter at night than they are during the day, Vin thought, pulling her patched ska cloak close, turning a corner.
She passed beggars, huddled on corners, hands outstretched and hoping for an offering, their pleadings falling vainly on the ears of people who were themselves starving. She passed workers, walking with heads and shoulders bowed, caps or hoods pulled down to keep ash out of their eyes. Occasionally she passed squads of garrison town guards, walking with full armor, breastplate, cap, and black cloak, trying to look as intimidating as possible. This last group moved through the slums, acting as the Lord Ruler's hands in an area most obligators found too distasteful to visit. The garrisoners kicked at beggars to make certain they were truly invalids, stopped wandering workers to harass them about being on the streets instead of working, and made a general nuisance of themselves. Vin ducked down as a group passed, pulling her hood close. She was old enough that she should have been either bearing children or working in a mill. But her size often made her look younger in profile. Either the ruse worked or this particular squad wasn't interested in looking for ditchers, for they let her pass with barely a glance. She ducked around a corner, walking down an ash-drifted alley, and approached the soup kitchen at the end of the small street. Like most of its kind, the kitchen was dingy and poorly maintained. In an economy where workers were rarely, if ever, given direct pay, kitchens had to be supported by the nobility. Some local lords, probably the owners of the mills and forges in the area, paid the kitchen owner to provide food for the local ska. The workers would be given meal tokens for their time, and would be allowed a short break at midday to go eat. The central kitchen would allow the smaller businesses to avoid the costs of providing on-site meals. Of course, since the kitchen owner was paid directly, he could pocket whatever he could save on ingredients. In Vin's experience, kitchen food was about as tasty as ash water. Fortunately, she hadn't come to eat. She joined the line at the door, waiting quietly as workers presented their meal chips. When her turn came, she pulled out a small wooden disc and passed it to the ska man at the door. He accepted the chip with a smooth motion, nodding almost imperceptibly to his right. Vin walked in the indicated direction, passing through a filthy dining room, floor scattered with tracked-in ash. As she approached the far wall, she could see a splintery wooden door set in the room's corner. A man seated by the door caught her eyes, nodded slightly, and pushed the door open. Vin passed quickly into the small room beyond.
"Vin, my dear," Breeze said, lounging at a table near the center of the room. "Welcome. How was Felice?"
Vin shrugged, taking a seat at the table.
"Ah," Breeze said, "I'd almost forgotten what a fascinating conversationalist you are. Wine?"
Vin shook her head.
"Well, I would certainly like some."
Breeze wore one of his extravagant suits, dueling cane resting across his lap. The chamber was only lit by a single lantern, but it was far cleaner than the room outside. Of the four other men in the room, Vin recognized only one, an apprentice from Clubs's shop. The two by the door were obviously guards. The last man appeared to be a regular ska worker, complete with blackened jacket and ashen face. His self-confident air, however, proved that he was a member of the underground, probably one of Yeadon's rebels. Breeze held up his cup, tapping its side with his fingernail. The rebel regarded it darkly.
"Right now," Breeze said, "you're wondering if I'm using allomancy on you. Perhaps I am, perhaps I am not. Does it matter? I'm here by your leader's invitation, and he ordered you to see that I was made comfortable. And I assure you, a cup of wine in my hand is absolutely necessary for my comfort."
The ska man waited for a moment, then snatched the cup and stalked away, grumbling under his breath about foolish costs and wasted resources. Breeze raised an eyebrow, turning to Vin. He seemed quite pleased with himself.
"So did you push him?" she asked.
Breeze shook his head.
"Waste of brass. Did Kelsier tell you why he asked you to come here today?"
"He told me to watch you," Vin said, a bit annoyed at being handed off to Breeze. "He said he didn't have time to train me in all the metals."
"Well," Breeze said, "let us begin then. First, you must understand that soothing is about more than just allomancy. It's about the delicate and noble art of manipulation."
"Noble indeed," Vin said.
"Ah, you sound like one of them," Breeze said.
"Them who?"
"Them everyone else," Breeze said. "You saw how that Scar gentleman treated me. People don't like us, my dear. The idea of someone who can play with their emotions, who can mystically get them to do certain things, makes them uncomfortable. What they do not realize, and what you must realize, is that manipulating others is something that all people do. In fact, manipulation is at the core of our social interaction."
He settled back, raising his dueling cane and gesturing with it slightly as he spoke.
"Think about it. What is a man doing when he seeks the affection of a young lady? Why, he is trying to manipulate her to regard him favorably. What happens when two old friends sit down for a drink? They tell stories, trying to impress each other. Life as a human being is about posturing and influence. This isn't a bad thing. In fact, we depend upon it. These interactions teach us how to respond to others."
He paused, pointing at Vin with the cane.
"The difference between soothers and regular people is that we are aware of what we are doing. We also have a slight advantage. But is it really that much more powerful than having a charismatic personality or a fine set of teeth? I think not."
Vin paused.
"Besides," Breeze added, "as I mentioned, a good soother must be skilled far beyond his ability to use allomancy. Allomancy can't let you read minds or even emotions. In a way, you're as blind as anyone else. You fire off pulses of emotions, targeted at a single person or in an area, and your subjects will have their emotions altered, hopefully producing the effect that you wished. However, great soothers are those who can successfully use their eyes and instincts to know how a person is feeling before they get soothed."
"What does it matter how they're feeling?" Vin said, trying to cover her annoyance. "You're just going to soothe them anyway, right? So when you're done, they'll feel how you want them to." Breeze sighed, shaking his head.
"What would you say if you knew I'd soothed you on 3 separate occasions during our conversation?"
Vin paused.
"When?" she demanded. "Does it matter?" Breeze asked. "This is the lesson you must learn, my dear. If you can't read how someone is feeling, then you'll never have a subtle touch with emotional allomancy. Push someone too hard, and even the most blind of Scar will realize that they're being manipulated somehow. Touch too softly, and you won't produce a noticeable effect. Other, more powerful emotions will still rule your subject."
Breeze shook his head.
"It's all about understanding people," he continued. "You have to read how someone is feeling, change that feeling by nudging it in the proper direction, then channel their newfound emotional state to your advantage. That, my dear, is the challenge in what we do. It is difficult, but for those who can do it well..."
The door opened, and the sullen Scar man returned, bearing an entire bottle of wine. He put it and a cup on the table before Breeze, then went over to stand on the other side of the room, beside peepholes, looking into the dining room.
"There are vast rewards," Breeze said with a quiet smile.
He winked at her, then poured some wine. Vin wasn't certain what to think. Breeze's opinion seemed cruel, yet Rain had trained her well. If she didn't have power over this thing, others would gain power over her through it. She started burning copper, as Kelsier had taught her, to shield herself from further manipulations on Breeze's part. The door opened again, and a familiar vest-wearing form tromped in.
"Hey, Vin,"
Ham said with a friendly wave. He walked over to the table, eyeing the wine.
"Breeze, you know that the Rebellion doesn't have the money for that kind of thing."
"Kelsier will reimburse them," Breeze said with a dismissive wave. "I simply cannot work with a dry throat."
"How is the area?"
"Secure," Ham said. "But I've got tin eyes on the corners just in case. Your bolt exit is behind that hatch in the corner."
Breeze nodded, and Ham turned, looking at Clubs's apprentice.
"You smoking back there, Cobble?"
The boy nodded.
"Good lad," Ham said. "That's everything, then. Now we just have to wait for Kel's speech."
Breeze checked his pocket watch.
"He's not scheduled for another few minutes. Shall I have someone fetch you a cup?"
"I'll pass," Ham said.
Breeze shrugged, sipping his wine. There was a moment of silence. Finally, Ham spoke.
"So, no," Breeze interrupted. "But whatever it is, we don't want to hear about it."
Ham gave the soother a flat stare.
"You can't push me into complacence, Breeze."
Breeze rolled his eyes, taking a drink.
"What?"
Vin asked. "What were you going to say?"
"Don't encourage him, my dear," Breeze said.
Vin frowned. She glanced at Ham, who smiled. Breeze sighed.
"Just leave me out of it. I'm not in the mood for one of Ham's inane debates."
"Ignore him,"
Ham said eagerly, pulling his chair a little bit closer to Vin.
"So I've been wondering.
By overthrowing the final empire, are we doing something good, or are we doing something bad?
Vin paused. Does it matter? Ham looked taken aback, but Breeze chuckled.
Well answered, the soother said.
Ham glared at Breeze, then turned back to Vin.
Of course it matters.
Well, Vin said, I guess we're doing something good. The Final Empire has oppressed the Ska for centuries.
Right, Ham said, but there's a problem. The Lord Ruler is God, right?
Vin shrugged. Does it matter? Ham glared at her. She rolled her eyes. All right. The Ministry claims that he is God.
Actually, Breeze noted, the Lord Ruler is only a piece of God. He is the sliver of infinity, not omniscient or omnipresent, but an independent section of a consciousness that is.
Ham sighed.
I thought you didn't want to be involved.
Just making certain everyone has their facts correct, Breeze said lightly.
Anyway, Ham said, God is the creator of all things, right? He is the force that dictates the laws of the universe and is therefore the ultimate source of ethics. He is absolute morality.
Vin blinked.
You see the dilemma? Ham asked.
I see an idiot, Breeze mumbled.
I'm confused, Vin said. What's the problem?
We claim to be doing good, Ham said. But the Lord Ruler, as God, defines what is good. So by opposing him, we're actually evil. But since he's doing the wrong thing, does evil actually count as good in this case?
Vin frowned.
Well? Ham asked.
I think you gave me a headache, Vin said.
I warned you,
Breeze noted. Ham sighed.
But don't you think it's worth thinking about?
I'm not sure.
I am, Breeze said.
Ham shook his head.
No one around here likes to have decent, intelligent discussions.
The Ska rebel in the corner suddenly perked up. Kelsier's here. Ham raised an eyebrow, then stood.
I should go watch the perimeter. Think about that question, Vin.
All right, Vin said as Ham left.
Over here, Vin, Breeze said, rising. There are peepholes on the wall for us. Be a dear and bring my chair over, would you?
Breeze didn't look back to see if she did as requested. She paused, uncertain. With her copper on, he couldn't soothe her, but... Eventually, she sighed and carried both chairs over to the side of the room. Breeze slid back a long, thin slat in the wall, revealing a view of the dining room. A group of dirtied Ska men sat around tables wearing brown work coats or ragged cloaks. They were a dark group, with ash-stained skin and slumped postures. However, their presence at the meeting meant that they were willing to listen. Yeadon sat at a table near the front of the room, wearing his usual patched worker's coat, his curly hair cut short during Vin's absence. Vin had expected some kind of grand entrance from Kelsier. Instead, however, he simply walked quietly out of the kitchen. He paused by Yeadon's table, smiling and speaking quietly with the man for a moment. Then he stepped up before the seated workers. Vin had never seen him in such mundane clothing before. He wore a brown Ska coat and tan trousers, like many of the audience. Kelsier's outfit, however, was clean. No soot stained the cloth, and while it was of the same rough material that Ska commonly used, it bore no patches or tears. The difference was stark enough, Vin decided. If he'd come in a suit, it would have been too much. He put his arms behind his back, and slowly the crowd of workers quieted. Vin frowned, watching through the peep slit, wondering at Kelsier's ability to quiet a room of hungry men by simply standing before them. Was he using